This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When Beth McKenzie's grandmother passed away, she left behind a hefty nursing home bill and a dilapidated mansion. And it was up to Beth to figure out what to do. But she did have a plan. She would fix the place up and open a charming bed and breakfast. And then her first guest was murdered. And once again, this quaint B&B was now in danger. And that is the premise of Doing It at the Dixie Do, a new novel by Pittsburgh-based author Ruth Moose. It's an Agatha Christie-inspired murder mystery about eccentric characters and small-town life you can't miss. Ruth Moose joins us now. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
This is wonderful. Now, you have been mostly a short story writer, and now you have this novel. What inspired the novel?
Well, it was written 25 years ago, and I was Doris Betts' first creative writing student.
Doris Betts. Oh, wow. That's a good start with Doris
yeah,
Betts.
Yeah, and I've always had trouble plotting. Short stories don't require a lot of plot. And Doris said, if you want to learn to plot, write a mystery.
And you did.
And I did.
And it was this one. And it was 25 years ago.
Right.
So where's it been?
Well, it's gone through three different computer systems. It was written on a K-Pro, which was an early
K-Pro.
Early word wow. processor. Then it was converted to a Dell, and then it was converted to a Mac. And every time it was converted, I tinkered with it. And originally, it was called Murder on Main Street. And somewhere along the line, I realized the bed and breakfast didn't have a name. So I named it the Dixie Do, and of course, the title came after that.
This is an Agatha Christie-inspired novel, would you say?
Yes, because it has eccentric characters and people, reviewers, and readers and so forth have said that it's funnier than it is frightening.
Did you intend for that? It does. It is wonderful humor all through. Is this something that you really intended, or you just can't help yourself?
I can't help myself.
And did it help you with plot? I mean, was that hard for you? Here's Doris Betts telling you you're a wonderful writer. You have a problem with plotting. Now you're going to set off to do the kind of literature that requires, you know, exquisite attention to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it really hard for you?
No, because I've always believed that plot arises out of character. And I always told my students at Carolina, if you have a character, you have a plot.
But apparently that's not true. I mean, so what was the difference? So you thought that's true, and yet in your short stories where the characters come alive and are wonderful – it doesn't quite translate to a novel because there's some element that's missing, right? What was that? What is the difference?
Well, I will forever be a short story lover. I still adore the short story. And I think the short story, you can start one and finish it before you go to sleep at night. One of the differences, novel, you sort of settle into it. And Lee Smith always told me that writing a novel is easier than writing short stories. Because she said with a novel, you've got your characters, you've got your setting, you just keep going with it. So it requires a lot more concentration than a short story. Well, I don't know. All of it requires concentration.
Well, this one is set in the fictional small town of Littleboro. So give us a sense of your experience growing up in a small town in North Carolina.
Well, I grew up in Albemarle, which is in Stanley County, which is in the Uwharries. It's halfway between here and Charlotte. And a friend of mine, Sally Buckner, who also grew up in Albemarle, right after she finished it, I think she read it in a day and a half. She said she couldn't put it down. She called me immediately and she said, Ruth, this is Albemarle. But actually, there's a lot of small towns in the South with the courthouse in the middle and the Confederate soldier statue. Mm-hmm. So I made up the town of Littleboro, but it could be a lot of little towns.
Ruth Moose made up that town in her novel, Doing It at the Dixie Do. And Ruth, I wonder if I can get you to read for us.
I would love to. This is the opening, chapter one. People don't go to a bed and breakfast to die, do they? I'd never heard of it before. But let me tell you about Miss Lavinia Lovingood. She came to my bed and breakfast, the Dixie Do, in Littleboro, North Carolina. Checked in and checked out. She died. Went to bed in my azalea room, fresh with deep pink paint and wallpaper still damp from the hanging, and never got up. I couldn't believe it. there I was after my first night in the bed and breakfast business, and I'd had 6 guests, 2 couples and 2 singles. Miss Lavinia Lovingood, one of the singles, who was surely 80-plus, but extremely well-kept, if you know what I mean. When the reservation came, Ida Plum Duckett, my good right arm and lifesaver in general, peeked over my shoulder and said, "Come home to die, did she?" "Who?" I asked, wondering how somebody in Rome, Italy, not Rome, Georgia, around here you had to specify, knew about the Dixie Dew bed and breakfast. "You know her? Beth McKenzie Henry, if you knew anybody in this town, you knew a Lovingood," Ida Plum said. "Took the whole hill in the cemetery for themselves until they daughtered out. I guess she was the last one." Anyway, I'll summarize a little bit.
This is perfectly wonderful. I'm loving every second of this. But do summarize, yes.
Okay. Ida Plum Duckett came to work at the Dixie Dew because she said she had a daughter, granddaughter in California, and she could never go live in a place where they dried okra and put it in arrangements instead of breading and frying it. So she's sort of the, you know, right-hand person. And anyway, all the guests have checked out except Miss Lavinia. And Beth doesn't know what to do. And so there's a knock at the door, and there's a man in black, and this is the young, good-looking priest at the Catholic Church. And he tells her he has Miss Lavinia's handbag, that she had tea with him yesterday, and she left her handbag. So this gives Beth an excuse to go upstairs and tap on her door. So this is what she does. "The upstairs hall was so quiet, I even found myself tiptoeing, though nobody was in the other 3 bedrooms. I tapped lightly on the door and called, 'Miss Lavinia?' There wasn't a sound, not even a soft snore or a little cough. Everything was too quiet. Ida Plum came up the stairs, arms full of sheets for the linen closet. 'Maybe she's hard of hearing. Did you knock hard enough?' I knocked again, hard and loud. The old door thumped and rattled. My fist actually ached, I'd knocked so hard. Still no answer. No sound of movement inside. Nothing. I knocked, called, knocked again. Ida Plum nudged me aside and inserted the master key from its nail in the linen closet. Miss Lavinia wasn't in bed. The room seemed to be empty. I noticed the window was open and my new lace curtains getting damp from the blowing rain. I ran to close the window and almost tripped over Miss Lavinia. She lay in a twisted lump of pink satin between the bed and the white wicker desk, one arm under, one arm out, a piece of paper nearby. The bouquet of lilacs and white tulips and Mama Alice's parsley I'd used for greenery was overturned and scattered across the floor. Miss Lavinia's satin slippers stood beside the bed, and her matching robe lay across a chair. Her book and glasses were on the bedside table. I touched her shoulder, a shoulder so cold I felt it through the fabric. 'Oh,' I pulled back. Ida Plum reached around me, took Miss Lavinia's lace-covered wrist, and felt for a pulse. 'None,' she said. 'Better call 911. They'll get Eikenberry's.' 'The funeral home? Oh, God,' I thought. 'Oh, my God.' 'The phone?' Ida Plum put both hands on my shoulders and turned me around and marched me from the room and aimed me toward the stairs. And then she closed Miss Lavinia's bedroom door and locked it tight, but not before I'd grabbed the piece of paper off the floor and shoved it in my pocket. In the end, Ida Plum was the one to call 911. I stood in the kitchen shivering like a New England winter. I pulled the paper from my pocket and read 2 words scribbled in Miss Lavinia's handwriting. 'That is what?' I asked. 'What?' I heard the Med Alert leave the fire station wailing. The wailing got louder and louder, and my grandmother's expression, loud enough to wake the dead, kept playing in my mind. Except nothing would ever wake Miss Lavinia again.
And from there, the plot will thicken. Doing It at the Dixie Do, a novel by Ruth Moose. That's how we open up the murder, the plot, the scene is set. And a lot of crazy characters in here. I mean, I love the fact that you have Ida Plum. Any relation to Professor Plum from Clue?
No. Nope.
Okay, because that would have been perfect. Crazy Reba, Verna, you got Robert Redford in here.
Right. He's a big white rabbit.
Well, okay. But it's Robert Redford nonetheless. who are these characters? Are these did they sort of come to you as the novel unfolded, or were they scrambling around your head the whole time?
They sort of came as the novel unfolded. And the Robert Redford, the rabbit, I was at a play a long time ago. And during intermission, I heard two ladies behind me talking. And one of them said, I was sitting there watching TV with Robert Redford last night. And her friend said, why on earth would anybody name a rabbit Robert Redford? And the first lady said, I figured that was as close to him as I was ever going to get.
So you knew right then someday he'd be in yeah. one of your works of literature. The other thing is you wrote this book 25 years ago, and a lot has changed since then. And so your editors had to make just a few minor changes, I guess.
Right. At one point, Beth gets locked in a mausoleum, and my editor, one of the few who still works hard copy, had written in the margin of the manuscript, where was her cell phone? So I had to put in something about a cell phone. Mm-hmm.
And a letter. The fact right. is you had people writing letters because 25 years ago, believe it or not,
right.
not as common as it is
yeah.
today.
So and so she asked me about that. When Beth gets a Christmas letter from somebody, she said, why didn't they email? And I said, because this person was a Luddite. They just thought that all these electronics were polluting the airwaves.
Easy changes to make. By the way, I will be forever grateful because there we are. Well, in my version of the book, I have the advanced reading copy. It's page 125. There we are, WUNC. We worked silently for the most part, surrounded and filled from fingertips to toes with good talk from WUNC Radio.
And the fact checker in New York called me on that. She said, at this hour, WUNC is playing Back Porch Music.
we're not doing talk. 25 years? Well, yes, they are, because both Keith and Freddie are in their late 90s, so they've been doing the show for 700 years. So, yes, she was right about that, but you didn't have to make that change. We're doing the Dixie Do on the State of Things. Ruth Moose is the novelist, and she joins us now. So you've got all these great characters. Humor, of course, a very important part in this. And it's right at the very beginning of the book. This is a State of Things exclusive. It is a first on our program. Ruth, I'm going to ask you to read your acknowledgments. We've never asked an author to read their acknowledgments. Yours are a hoot. Would you?
Well, I just think all these sticky acknowledgments are just too much. I mean, people thank everybody from their first grade teacher to their cat to their hamster. And so I wanted to do something different. So these are my acknowledgments. This is not to thank the members of my long ago Charlotte writers group who disliked this manuscript from word one. My husband who said, whatever you do, don't write a novel. It takes too long, you'll never get it published, and you can't plot. And my sons who ask, what do you know about running a bed and breakfast? And then I have a note to my academic cellmates. Doing It at the Dixie Do has the only two subjects W.B. Yeats said were worth writing about, sex and death. Plus, I have a third one, food. And then I go on seriously and do thank some good friends and some organizations and so forth.
Don't read those. Okay. Don't read those. So you wrote this novel. You got it published. You are have been writing mostly short stories. Are you going to write another novel? Do you like it now?
Well, as Lee Smith told me a long time ago, in a way it's easier because you've got all this groundwork already done. And so you just settle in with these characters and you say, what are they doing now? And I have finished the sequel. The sequel is called Wedding Bell Blues. And Crazy Reba, who is the resident street person in Littleborough, she's getting married.
Well, that we can't wait to see that. When you talked about that, and you talked about Lee Smith sort of saying, well, once you get it all laid out, it suggests that there's a kind of a template, a way that these things are plotted. Do you begin with a sort of an outline and then plug your characters in? How does it work for you?
Sticky notes. I use sticky notes, and I have them all over the house, and just little things I think about at odd moments, I put them on a sticky note. So it's the sticky note method of novel writing.
All right. But is there – but the plot – again, we got to get back to this. Did you learn about plotting, do you think? I mean, it holds up very well.
Well, maybe it does. I don't know. I was really worried about it because it won this Malice Domestic Prize for a first mystery novel. And immediately after it won, I thought, oh, they're going to find out I can't plot. But
no, they should have noticed that when they read the entry,
right.
I think.
Well, and I know Nancy Peacock told me, she said, Ruth, if it won this award, it must be okay.
There you go.
But I didn't feel very comfortable until we got it all, you know, set in type, I guess.
It's lovely, and I can't wait for the second one. Ruth Moose, author of Doing It at the Dixie Do, a murder mystery set at a Southern bed and breakfast. Thank you so much for being in the program.
Well, enjoyed it.
And she's going to be reading from her new novel at Letters Bookshop in Durham next Tuesday, July 29th. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, and Will Michaels. Our intern is Charlie Shelton. Robin Copley is our technical director. Our news director is Brent Wolf. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.